cell phone isn't working. Don't wait until a disaster strikes to figure it out. It's your responsibility to make a plan for you and your family ahead of time. To learn how, take our readiness challenge at nyc.gov/readynewyork or call 311 for information. Brought to you by the New York City Office of Emergency Management and the Ad Council. Extra 2 minutes here on
WUSB Stony Brook. Okay. 2 minutes early. All right. We'll take it. Sure. Extra 2 minutes here on WUSB Stony Brook of Off the Wall. Very good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Steen here with you on this delightful Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing all right. It's It's a nice spring day. A little bit of rain, a little bit of sun. Not too hot, not too cold.
Yes, a mixed bag.
A mixed bag.
As you might say, an idiom for this type of weather. Mm-hmm. Colder than it's been. It's been very, very warm and sort of hot and humid, but this is different. This is nice weather. I love the rain. I love the sound of it and all that comes, you know, splashing and getting soaked. And, yeah, it's a real familiar thing for me. I'm always at home when there's a good bit of weather like that.
What, you're never not at home when the weather is like that?
I'm more at home.
Oh, you mean you feel at home?
Yeah.
I was thinking you're always just sitting at home, like, you know, watching the weather outside and... I know you're outside a lot.
Right.
That seemed kind of strange. Okay, now I understand.
I apologize.
Speaking of idioms, the idioms of language, how easy it is to be misunderstood.
It's a dastardly thing, yes.
Who are you calling it? Yes, I know exactly what you mean now.
Yes.
Okay.
But I guess we can't have a show without mentioning the Clown Prince himself.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you, man.
His Majesty.
What will they think of next? Well, you know, I'll tell you, Cleveland had a really good shot in that last game. Wait, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about basketball, or are we talking about what sport? Oh, we're talking about politics. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, inherently everything is political, especially these days. But I was referring to our nation's sport and a team that is represented, their actual mascot is our country's bird, and they want nothing to do with this White House. How about that?
Well,
that's
the thing, though. That's how it's being portrayed, that they wanted nothing to do with any of this, when in actuality it just wasn't as big as Trump wanted it to be, so he basically castigated the entire team and said, if I can't have it all, nobody can have anything, and threw a big tantrum and accused them of things that they never even did. Not that there'd be anything wrong with them doing it. They weren't protesting the national anthem. In fact, I don't even think a single player on their team was kneeling. But just because a few players, or even maybe a sizable number of players, didn't really feel comfortable going to the White House, he chose to portray it as the entire team turning their back on him, which, again, you know, they have every right to do, and I think they'll do it even more now.
I thought not one of them stood for the national anthem during the entire season.
Not one stood for the national anthem the entire season.
Yes.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I don't follow these things.
It could have been the opposite. I mean,
are there sports statistics that tell you
maybe,
who stood for the national anthem?
Maybe it is a new category in stats for NFL. We'll have to leave that for the sports show.
Yeah, that sounds like a pure sports issue more than anything else. It's basically backfired like most things he says happen to, you know, basically... everybody's talking about how this is insane and childish and just not constructive at all.
Well, and also how he dealt with it. I mean, that became the story, and it ended up in this, like, peculiar, odd official thing, but had sort of streaks of his political rallies that are so popular when he's not golfing on the weekends. These big rallies and so on. Well, he kind of tried to turn this official event that is, you know, sort of a tradition after a season and so on into this kind of a PR or I guess a stunt or a rally for patriotism, and ended up being with this demand that people have certain sort of feelings about the flag, whether they do or not, is not the matter. The matter is, if you're an American, you have to do this. He's redefining sort of what allegiance is defined as, and in the context of pledge of that, or the national anthem, and so on and so forth, before these events, and the flag in general. But the subtext is, you have to do what King Trump says. So it was really awkward and it was thinly attended, and I don't know. What were your thoughts?
It's basically a trick, too, and I dare say it's a bit clever, because what you wind up doing if you disagree with that particular way of handling things is you protest the thing that you weren't going to protest in the first place by protesting him. So now more people won't stand for the national anthem, but it wasn't a national anthem they were protesting. They were protesting the way Trump is dealing with this in the first place. But he's kind of owning the national anthem and the flag by saying, if you don't do this, you know, and basically putting himself as the representative of both of them, the national anthem and the flag, when in fact he represents those two concepts least of all. And I'm talking about the good parts of those concepts, not the bad parts, because there are certainly bad parts in our history. But by saying that, yeah, if you don't do it my way, then you're protesting the flag and you're protesting the national anthem. It's not necessarily what people were doing in the first place. You know, they were protesting police violence and, you know, African Americans being gunned down by cops in this country. That's a very legitimate thing to protest. They weren't protesting the founding of America. They weren't protesting the national anthem. They were simply using the national anthem as the vehicle to show this, because everybody's thinking about justice at that. Well, at least you should be, right? I mean, that's what people are doing when they're singing the national anthem and doing the Pledge of Allegiance and looking at the flag. I dare say those players that kneel are more patriotic than anyone else, because they are actually thinking in silence, too. Not disruptive, not disrespectful in any way. They're kneeling, which to me is the ultimate sign of respect. And I don't think anyone else really is giving it that much thought. That should be praised, not condemned. But by portraying it in this way, Trump is putting himself in the position of the great defender of democracy when he is so far away from that, and he has virtually no understanding of it. So really, I think our reaction is what will dictate how this goes down. I think, you know, yeah, the play, what LeBron James said recently. In light of what Trump did with the Philadelphia Eagles, LeBron James said neither his Cleveland Cavaliers nor the Golden State Warriors would accept a visit as a winner of the NBA Finals. Now, he's not actually speaking for the Golden State Warriors. Stephen Curry, I believe, was speaking for them. But imagine that statement. They're saying that whoever wins, we're not going to the White House because, you know, we don't want to be a part of this. We don't believe in what you're doing. And that's got nothing to do with respecting the flag. That's got nothing to do with respecting the national anthem. That has to do with standing up to an idiot and calling him out, which is what all of us should be doing. I think that's our patriotic duty.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is something that needs to be emphasized and is sort of being lost in the conflating of these things. Again, you know, it becoming an issue of patriotism or allegiance or definitions of that, then, you know, sort of completely missing the actual statement that is being made. And one thing that came up in the press conference today that was really interesting, or just was well defined, is April Wilson was trying to get a question in and was actually interrupting to take some time.
Disrespectful black woman who didn't know her place, wouldn't
the
shut
reporter,
up when she was told to be quiet?
Correct. But she made a really good point that the speech in the Supreme Court case that was recently ruled upon with the Colorado's state laws regarding discrimination or anti-discrimination being overruled, or their appeal being overruled regarding this cake issue. And she really pointed out that, you know, how are an individual's rights, an artist's rights to speech in creating a product, any different than a player's right to not participate in something until inequity and issues of police brutality are addressed in this country? How is that any less or more patriotic? And I think that was a really great point, that Trump is trying to get away with this double standard, and it just does not at all add up. Meanwhile, his own people, I mean, are being completely, like, Manafort is being held in contempt or something, or has been trying to taint witnesses, or witness tampering is what he's being accused of, trying to warn people about testimony, and or he just...
is so corrupt.
You
and
could
yet,
not pick a more ridiculous bunch of people to hang out with and to associate yourself with than Trump has done.
Yeah, and we're then, of course, supposed to, at the same time, turn a blind eye to that and use and listen to him as sort of the moral authority in the room. It is really asinine, and yet we're living through it.
Yeah, somehow we're living through it. But, you know, I think we need to be more vocal. I think we need to be out in the streets a lot more often. We need to be disruptive a lot more often. We need to be challenging these people. Hey, today's primary day in a bunch of states, and hopefully that says something. I'm hearing California could somehow screw the whole thing up because, A, the system they have, and B, the mentality of Democrats out there. Supposedly, there are so many people running, and none of them will yield to anyone else, that it's possible the vote may be so fractured between them all that they may get no representation in November, if you can imagine that. They're calling it the jungle primary because I guess it's crazy and insane. The top two will go to the election in November. I don't know all the facts about this because the whole thing is just so alien and insane to me. What I understand is it's conceivable that two Republicans could wind up being on the ballot instead of a Republican and a Democrat because nobody will yield and everybody wants their voice to be the dominant one. And this is something that not only the Democrats but the left in general just cannot seem to get past. And boy, do they need to do that, and they need to do that in a hurry because the time has never been more urgent to overthrow what is there right now. And if we can't get past our own petty bickering amongst ourselves, which the left can never seem to do, we're going to just wind up with more of the same. In fact, more of even worse. You know, it's pathetic. And if the results tonight in California underline that, I am really going to be very dismayed.
I'm impressed, though. I think there is strategy. I think there is, in the last couple of months, been a concerted effort to pull together and really attack these different races. And not be caught up in the weeds and issues or not focused. This has been, I think, building since the inauguration of this guy, and it's going to continue quite prudently with gusto. And you know, people have been out there speaking. You know, in the races that are coming up here in New York, but we were listening to an interview with Bernie Sanders. I mean, the strategy is there, the leadership is there, but communicating a plan, getting people excited about it, I think, is the limiting factor in really getting the numbers up and people equally focused on what's important and the next steps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, this has been graduation week for many places. There have been all kinds of speeches and momentous events. There was one in Kentucky, which I thought was of interest. A valedictorian in Kentucky was basically giving a speech for Bell County High School, southeastern Kentucky schools, about 80 miles north of Knoxville, Tennessee. And just to give you an idea, the closest a 21st century Democratic presidential candidate has come to winning the hearts and minds of the people of Bell County was in 2004 when John Kerry got a whopping 39% of the people there to vote for him. Every other race has been more or less a landslide by anyone who was on the Republican side of the ballot. Nearly 71% voted for John McCain in 2008. Mitt Romney got 76% in 2012. Donald Trump, 82% in 2016. So on Saturday, Bolling was slated to give a speech before his cap and gown wearing peers and their families, as he noted in his speech, where he basically said, and this is a quote, "This is part of my speech where I share some inspirational quotes I found on Google." And here's a quote he found. "Don't just get involved. Fight for your seat at the table. Better yet, fight for a seat at the head of the table. Donald J. Trump said that." And the crowd went wild, according to a video that was shared with the Louisville Courier-Journal. And their applause for the commander-in-chief almost drowned out what Bolling said next. You ready?
Yes.
"Just kidding. That was Barack Obama." And the applause died down to silence. And someone booed. And secretly, some other people were laughing to themselves, I'm sure. So that is pretty much what happens. You can basically give Trump credit for anything. People will go nuts. He said to a newspaper later, the crowd erupted in applause, and before they could even finish clapping, I said I was kidding, and the applause quickly died. I just thought it was a really good quote. Most people wouldn't like it if I used it, so I thought I'd use Donald Trump's name. It is southeastern Kentucky, after all. But, you know, that epitomizes what we are right now. We're basically, you can say whatever you want to say, but if it's not the person that you are pledging allegiance to,
your tribe,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how wise it is, how worthy of your support. If it's the wrong person saying it, it's the worst thing in the world. You know, so Trump gets away with anything because they are supportive of whatever it is they think he stands for. And it's just, it's really baffling that we can't see this. So many of us can't see this. And that goes for all political sides. I've noticed this many, many times. There is nobody, and I'm going to go into this again, there's nobody that annoys me more than people on the left who simply cannot get past the bickering and the infighting. I am so sick of hearing how, yes, Obama did bad things. We know. We know there's hypocrisy on all sides of politics. We get that. That is well established. So when we hear about the horrors that are going on our border today, we don't need a lecture saying, but Barack Obama signed this particular thing into law, and that picture that you see of kids in cages, that was under his watch. Yes, we know. We know bad things happened under that administration, but it does not compare in any sense to what's going on now. And if you refuse to make that point, you're every bit as bad as somebody who is waving the flag for Donald Trump. Get over it already. Yeah, every politician who's ever going to be elected is going to do bad and hypocritical things. And Barack Obama is no exception to that. Bill Clinton is no exception to that. There is nobody. Even if Bernie Sanders was in the office now, there'd be things we could point to. Absolutely. Look at anybody who has ever been elected. But if you can't honestly stand up and say, I will vote for this person over that person, and so many people on the left cannot seem to do that. They only want to vote for their candidate or nobody. You know, and that is just insane. That is so self-defeating and so childish, and I am so sick of it. For God's sake, people, grow up, band together, unite, and you can have your infighting later when you're in power, all right? Have your purges, do whatever you want to do. But for God's sake, let's all recognize the evil that is facing us, that's staring us down, that's winning. It's winning not because of their platform, not because of where they stand on anything. They're winning because of us, because of our weakness, because of our inability to band together, because of our purity test, where we have to cast people out if they disagree with us on one tiny issue or one big issue. Who cares? If they unite with you on another important issue, work with them. Work with them, and let's defeat this before it envelops us completely. I'm sorry. I'll get a drink of water now.
No, it's a real inertial problem, like getting a motivated outside of personal interest, disassociating that a little bit and seeing something for common unity and something that you can galvanize around instead of dissolving and disintegrating. That is so plagued, I think, various movements. It's always been when people come together. Sounds cliched, it is, yes, but it is always when people get over themselves enough to act and to have compassion, to listen and coordinate. I mean, that's it's not impossible. It's just it's been hard to see. I think a lot of people have been just too furious and paralyzed, I think, by the guise, the sort of craziness of everything to lose focus and not be proactive and just be stuck in this sort of a reactive loop to everything, with constantly reacting to, you know, people you're working with, even, as you've said. I mean, it's just it's a ridiculous ridiculous non-strategy for something that is, as you said, imminent. The smirking and backslapping that's going on while this administration gets away with this kind of stuff is it's happening right before our eyes, and we can't just be defeated. And I think that's a very common position for people on the left to as you said, not get what they want and then be inactive after that. Sometimes you have to make choices and decisions that you're not exactly, you know, they're not your first choice, but they are in your interest.
Yeah, very true, very true. So we move on to Betsy DeVos, school.
Yeah, something a little less stressful.
The person in charge of education somehow in this country. I swear, it's a mockery every day looking at the news and seeing the incompetent people or the destructive people in charge of such important parts of our society. What is going on in education in this country today is so tragic. We see reports all the time of schools that don't have supplies, of people who are getting funding slashed, teachers who have to actually pay for things themselves that should be supplied to them, and wages that are going down. Meanwhile, military is getting more than what they're asking for, and all sorts of other injustices are prevailing. But, okay, in all of that, Betsy DeVos is talking about the School Safety Commission that is looking into violence in schools, and basically what she has said is that the School Safety Commission, the Federal School Safety Commission, will not be looking at the role of guns in school safety. That is not part of the commission's charge, she said yesterday during a Senate Appropriations Subcommittee hearing. So we're going to talk about violence, but we're going to not talk about guns. I mean, I'm out of words to describe this, how insane this is.
It's too close. It's too close to their platform, right? It would not be in the interest of the NRA. It would alienate others of the cabinet and of this administration that really have an interest in being in bed with NRA above and beyond the lives of students and the general public and this feigned interest in rights.
Yeah, it's so distressing, though. I mean, you just feel like there's no hope sometimes. But, you know, I think, again, being loud, disruptive, and not letting these people have a moment's peace until they address these issues and deal with these issues that they have caused. You know, they have basically allowed this to happen in the first place, and now they won't even talk about it. They just, you know, their way of dealing with it is to make it even worse, to inject more weaponry into the system and hope that with all the crossfire going on, somebody good will hit somebody bad. And that is our school system now. That is how it's going to work in their eyes, and that's just fine. I mean, at what point do we say enough already? These people are out of their minds.
There was a report today I saw about students in Pennsylvania. It looks like clickbait. There was not that much coverage over it, and honestly, like a promotional stunt.
Uh-huh.
But there's this company called Unequal Technologies, which is like really a sort of poor choice of name for a company. But they're plates. They have these ballistic plates that they're branding. They're like $150. That this school, this middle school, bought for students graduating to from middle school to high school, so that they can have armor plates in their backpacks, and brought to you by Unequal Technologies. Right. So in the interest of business, we're now giving students the same kind of protection that deployed troops and other kinds of soldiers would have in like a chest plate of body armor, but this just slips neatly into your backpack, and that's what we're gonna do for students who are going into the real world.
Okay, I just found the story. This is the first I'm hearing of this. Okay, nationwide graduations are an opportunity to reflect and savor accomplishments, and to brightly anticipate the future. One Catholic school in Chads Ford, what a weird name, Chads Ford, Pennsylvania, in the spirit of preparing and protecting their graduating students, went a more macabre route, gifting eighth graders with bulletproof inserts to help keep them safe in the event of a school shooter. The removable ballistic shields given to St. Cornelius Catholic School students could turn their backpacks into bulletproof vests. It'll stop the most powerful handguns in the world, said Unequal Technologies CEO, who donated the shields to the graduating class. We went to the military testing ground and said, break this. They shot it with shotguns, buckshots, slugs, and could not penetrate. You know, I don't need to read any more to realize that there is something incredibly screwed up if that is considered appropriate in today's day and age.
Yeah, and just like the like, hey, we've got a product for this. It's like for every product and industry, right, there's this like that deals with there's a sub industry that deals with the byproduct of it. In this case, it is we have to have guns everywhere all the time.
Just telling these kids this is normal. This is something that you have to think about. You should not have to do that. We didn't have to do that going through school. Believe it or not, kids, if you're listening, this is not normal. This is not how we were brought up. And guess what? We had the Second Amendment then, and there were guns then, and we were violent, all of that. So, you know, what has changed? What's changed is insanity has taken over, and basically the NRA has been allowed to run roughshod over everybody and push their agenda through. And this is the result. It's insane. It's so crazy.
And what happens when one of these students with ballistic plates in their backpack turns into a shooter? Then they've got armor plating, right? I mean, again, you're in this circular thing of you know, throwing products and these sort of technical solutions at something that could be solved if we looked at it in a different way, and instead of the school is an extension of the battlefield all of a sudden, and as you said, again, it's like you're forcing kids to focus on the wrong things. It's the same kids who say, I'm not really surprised this happened at my school.
Yeah.
But what are we doing about it other than plugging companies that are selling stuff that is really a part of the armor industry or the weapon industry.
Well, I mean, speaking of the armor industry, I want to find one of those companies that constructs full plated armor, you know, like in the olden days where you wear a suit of armor.
Chainmail.
Okay, fine. Let's give that out to the kids now. Oh, you laugh. There's people laughing. Oh, I see you. Yeah, you think that's funny. That's literally one step away from what we're talking about right now. So why not have all our little kids go to school in full suits of armor? You need to turn the air conditioning up a little bit, but that's about it. They'll be safe. They'll make a lot of noise when they walk around, but they won't get shot at least. That's really the world we're moving towards where we're going to need to do that.
And it reminds me of Bubble Boy and many other...
Who's Bubble Boy?
I don't know. Some story or terrible, terrible movie, but...
The kid in the bubble.
Yeah,
picturing a kid in bubble wrap.
Right. Everybody has to be protected from everybody else.
Yeah, but you could shoot through that bubble. You could easily do that.
As if technology has not alienated people enough from human contact, this then adds another layer
but how
of physical
many,
protection.
How many people do you think do homeschooling now as a result of this insanity? You know?
Oh, right. Making even more socially well-adjusted human beings. No offense if you're homeschooled. But
I don't understand how homeschooling works. You're saying any parent is able to teach their kid the things that they learn in school.
Ask Betsy DeVos. I'm sure she could make you a teacher for homeschooling in a minute.
I mean, it's just you go to school for a reason to become a teacher, right? Doesn't that count anymore? It's not like anybody can just do that job and to say that, yeah, I'm going to teach my kid at the house and he's never going to get out and talk to anybody else. It just seems very unhealthy.
Yeah, and we're taking the institution apart. And this plays right into what Betsy DeVos wants, is this privatization of schools such that the public education system as we know it does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's anything to dismantle that, I mean, I think they are perfectly willing to let happen and let run its course. Whether that means everybody is homeschooled or we're sending kids to school in riot gear, whatever it means, you know, as long as it doesn't undermine the position and the platform of this administration, which is to maximize profits for all industry, no matter what, including the weapons industry.
Somewhere out there is a middle school kid or a high school kid somewhere who really is obnoxious. and full of individual spirit, who is willing to show up in school next year, because there's not enough time to plan for this year, in a full suit of armor. We will pay for the full suit of armor if you step up and say, yes, I will go to school, I will show up in school in a full suit of armor and refuse to take it off because I am afraid for my safety and I want to be safe in case somebody opens up, you know, and we'll get international news coverage and maybe we could even open a franchise selling suits of armor to kids. I don't know. But there's write to us, otw at 2600.com if you're interested in being part of that project. You know, I'd like to open up the phone lines if people want to talk to us about anything. 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. Haven't heard from our listeners in a while. You know, didn't really get much in the way of pushback for our analysis of the Second Amendment last week. Maybe people realize that it makes sense. We basically read it. We read it and analyzed it and realized that it doesn't say what everybody seems to think it says. There's a very important line in there, a well-regulated militia, which is part of the sentence. It's not a second sentence. It's not a sentence separated by a semicolon. It is a fundamental part of the sentence. Right of the people keeping bare arms shall not be infringed as a part of a well-regulated militia. And I think, you know, it's would be really, really confusing if you had a bumper sticker out there saying, I support a well-regulated militia. Because you're saying you support the Second Amendment. But you're saying you support the interpretation of the Second Amendment that says a well-regulated militia, being the first words of that amendment, are the main part of it. All right? So it doesn't mean that everybody can just walk around with whatever armaments they feel are required for their lifestyle. No, that's not what it meant. That's not what the people back then meant either. They certainly didn't foresee all of these things coming. The only feedback I got were from people, in real life saying, yeah, but, you know, that's not what they meant. That's not what they meant. How do we interpret what they meant other than the words that they wrote? People talk differently back. Yeah, I know people talk differently back then. And if it doesn't make any sense anymore, maybe we should rewrite it so it does make sense. But, you know, the words, I can understand the words. There's some awkward phrasing, absolutely. But a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. There's two commas in that sentence. The whole thing holds together. I could write it a little bit better, I think. But you can't get rid of a well-regulated militia. And if you do get rid of that, then you don't support the Second Amendment. All right? And I do. I support the Second Amendment. And if you're telling me that a well-regulated militia, if you're saying that is not a part of the Second Amendment, then I do not know what to say to you. Other than you do not support the Second Amendment in this country. I'm sorry. Oh, it feels good to say that.
Mm.
It really does.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I would fully back you up. I would say as much myself.
But you're putting a condition on that. You're saying you would. Not you will. You would means you know. I'm sorry, I'm in English language mode here, so you will back me up because I will be challenged.
I will, yeah.
Okay, we have a phone call. Let's see who's out there, see if I can figure out how to pick up the phone here. I haven't done this in a while. Good evening. Do we have somebody on the phone?
We do. How you doing?
Hey, what's up? What's on your mind?
I've called before. I just want to make a quick joke.
Oh, yes,
what
jokes.
What grade do you think everyone gets in public schooling and private if Betsy DeVos is the head of education?
Wait, first of all, if you turn on your radio a little bit, and I don't think I heard the first part of that. Can you just repeat it?
Yeah, I'll do both.
That's turning down the radio.
You're down, yep.
Now he's going to repeat the joke. Go ahead.
Not always like me. What grade do you think, it's a little bit of a chauvinist joke. What grade I'm not overdoing it. What grade do you think everyone in school, in public and private, should get with Betsy DeVos? Or what grade, let's put it this way. What grade should we give Betsy DeVos for education?
Well, I have my answer all prepared, but it's not very funny. You have any idea, Kyle? Or
D-.
We know it's a chauvinist joke somehow, but
I don't know. I was a bad student. Yeah. I wasn't really that. You know, I hate to give marks out. You know?
It's an insult to the letter F, but you know, as low a grade as possible. What's the answer?
A C.
A
She's
C.
A C. That's all I'll say. I'm not going to elaborate on it. That's not fair to your show.
Oh.
Oh, you get it? I don't get it.
I think the C word is involved.
Oh, okay. You know, now you just opened up a whole other topic I forgot about.
Yeah, okay.
What happened with Samantha Bee last week. And, you know, I got to say, she was referring to Ivanka Trump. I have no problem whatsoever with her saying something like that. I mean, you know, males cannot say that, you know. Just like white people can't use certain language around black people, you have to understand these things. You have to understand you are not part of a particular type of person, and the most you can do is try to understand, but you cannot ever be that type of a person, so you can't speak in the same way. But Samantha Bee is, and she can, and she did, and I support that.
And how about if you're offended that your daughter is being insulted, why don't you not have her in your cabinet? I mean, the nepotism and corruption there, I mean, maybe she wouldn't be a target of that insult.
Also, think of the worst possible thing you could call a male, such as Donald Trump or any other male in his administration, and would the reaction be as strong? No, it wouldn't be, because women must be protected, and you can't say these horrible things about them, just like when Sarah Sanders was insulted at the correspondence dinner, and when Ivanka Trump is referred to in this way, we have to leap to her defense. No, we don't have to. They chose to be where they are, and they need to be able to take it. Any other words, caller?
Can I go back to something else? I called a couple weeks ago, and you were saying, well, how is it over in Brentwood? I totally forgot. You know, forgive me. I totally forgot. On my block, there was this guy and his three daughters, and the one daughter was dating someone. And, you know, the community and the neighbors knew her. She's a nice gal. But I think she might have gotten in with the wrong people. And I'm not saying MS, because it's not MS. It's, I'm under the impression it was a Colombian association. Okay.
With multiple sclerosis, or?
I think he's talking about gangs like MS-13, this being more Central American, Colombian riffraff.
Okay, all right.
We woke up one Saturday where we would get up and head out of the driveway and go do errands and stop in some stores and, you know, whatever.
What were they? Were they what, like watching Narcos or something? I mean,
make a right out of the driveway, there was all this police tape. Now, this was several years back. I'm only here 15, so... she had dated somebody who was, well, from a questionable crew or something. And I don't know if it's crew or association. And I'm not here to racialize or say, if you're from this nation, you're a badass. Although I, let's say, knew the cocaine trade back in the day. So going back, she was murdered and her sister came to try to assist her in the squabble she had with, I don't know if it's an ex-boyfriend or a boyfriend or an associate of his, but it seems like a lot of people know who this is. But the big, mobile home type of truck that the crime scene unit of Suffolk County has was there also. She was murdered, and her sister came in to help, and her sister got her eye, lost an eye over it. So you were asking me how Brentwood is. Well, it's not so bad, you know, but... But again, I thought of this. I'm like, well, I never even thought to mention that to the guys. And I don't want to say it could be worse. But it could be worse.
Well, it could be worse, absolutely. But also it could be anywhere. It could be anywhere in the country. It could be, you know, Appalachia. It could be California. It could be Washington. It could be New York. You know, there are bad people all over the place. There's drugs everywhere. And there's crime everywhere. And... The moment you start saying that it's a particular type of person, a particular nationality, I think you're missing something, because there are so many variations. And you go to any country in the world, you will find things like this happening. So when we label, that's when we dig our heels in. That's when you have situations like what you have right now, where everybody trying to get into this country from particular parts of the world are being demonized. And you can see mistreated. What is happening to the people trying to get in here legitimately is far worse than anything that is happening as far as crime in this country, because crime in this country is something that is always among us, regardless of who is participating. But to actually label somebody and say these people are undesirables and must be treated as prisoners before they even do anything against the law. Remember, people coming into this country to seek asylum have not broken the law, yet they're being separated from their children, they're being put in detention, they're being mistreated. And that, to me, is a far greater crime because it's systemic. It's a societal crime. It's something that we're getting behind ourselves, and we're convincing ourselves that people who are undocumented somehow pose a security risk instead of, at most, an economic risk. Basically, you know, maybe taking jobs, even though they're jobs that people around here don't seem to want. But instead saying that, yeah, this is related to crime and to society falling apart, I don't see that. I see society falling apart from the top, from where we are expected to demonize a certain race of people, a certain nationality of people, simply because they want what we already have.
Am I still on with you?
Yes, you are.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that while we're there, we should really stop. We don't have to list them all, but think about all the nationalities and races and groups and people from other nations, which are all calling the gang, if they are being demonized. So it's anybody who's Islamic, anybody from the Middle East, and on and on, and South America, Central America, Mexico. Oh, come on. And plenty other places. Oh, Korea, you know, for the time being, and then they switch that off. And oh, come on. Oh, Russia, China. You know, we locked up the Japanese.
Mm-hmm. It's,
right?
It's not that far away from that we're at
yeah.
right now. That
well,
demonization.
We've done it, yeah. I don't want to overlabor it, but I needed to bring that back up and just let you know it can be like that everywhere, and it can be just anyone.
All right, thanks. Thanks for calling. Thanks for making those points. And we're going to open up phone lines, 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. It's really disgusting what's been going on lately, just seeing all this happening in our name, seeing the way people are being treated. Listening to Democracy Now! Before we came over, too, how people are actually being shot at the border for you know, reasons that are extremely unclear and exaggerated, as far as border agents saying they're under attack. A lot of questions being raised, not enough coverage of this. And it's just really distressing.
A lot of this stuff, I think, also we forget is fall-on effects of, like, you know, third- and fourth-hand consequences of systemic issues that have not been addressed. Mm-hmm. Like, these are byproducts of systems that are in place, and then, you know, you then have symptoms and other things occur because people are trying to get away from another thing. So this is where sort of diplomacy and our strategy and posture around the world affects other attributes of it. And just to speak on, like, the particular topic of drugs, I mean, you've got a market for it, and perhaps, you know, that wouldn't be thriving as much if there were other opportunities in the U.S. and it wasn't as lucrative for, you know, recreational use or whatever. Other kinds of things that, especially hard drugs, can divert people from, you know, productive society, and, mm-hmm. and our harsh attitudes towards you know, drugs in general have you know, incarcerated and victimized many, many people in the process. So people, you know, you hear this, like, trope of immigrants bringing, you know, I think I heard a story of liquid meth, you know, somebody, you know, their mules for drugs across the border. These are very small, tiny cases. Like, I mean, you know, maybe some enterprising individual, you know, does this stuff, but is a real a fringe fraction of the actual drug trade that's in, I think, large part
the majority of America, you know, a lot of America that drives that market, and you then have people on the edges of these you know, existing markets that are going on, who are discriminated against and then entangled in that, and a lot of that can happen as a result of discrimination. You know, in white neighborhoods, people aren't being charged as much as in black and brown neighborhoods, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, and the pharmaceutical industries are getting away with it too, because most drugs are over the counter. That's what people getting hooked on, prescription drugs.
But the heroin's then right there when their opioids run out.
Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Go ahead.
Hi. I was listening to your show earlier, and I just I agreed with everything you said. I just wanted to correct something that you said about the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry if I got something wrong. Go ahead.
Oh no, that's all right. I agree. I totally agree with what you said. You stated that if they were indeed protesting, that would be admirable, and I agree with that. The funny thing is that none of the Eagles throughout the whole season did any of the things that Bush accused them of doing.
Well, you mean Trump? And I did say that.
Sorry, Trump. Yes.
I did say that. That's what I heard, that nobody had actually protested against that.
Yeah, it was I who misspoke. I heard it wrong when I was looking at the reports earlier.
Kyle, you misspoke. I was right. All right. Well, let the record
start. It was not that they had not stood for the whole year. It's that they had not protested but not one of them had protested.
Let's give Trump credit. Maybe now they will protest.
I got it backwards. Yeah, I hope they do next season.
Well, actually, yeah, there were two players that did do the raised fist, but they did stand throughout the whole year.
And that's the thing.
And there are other teams like the,
yes,
the Seattle is known for doing pretty, you know.
Uh-huh.
Much more protesting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And also, right, you know, the raised fist is something because you can the rules that the NFL came out with recently, which I hope get overturned, say that you have to stand for the national anthem. They don't say anything about raising your fist. So I think every player, if they decide to abide by those rules in the first place, needs to raise their fist just to show that they won't be bossed around like that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this. You know, I'm kind of hoping that this all kind of backfires and explodes in Trump's face a little bit, because it's almost like the nationalist tone that he's taking here is kind of going to bring people out of their seats and want to say, you know, hey, we're not going to put up with this anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you can't.
Yeah, you can't impose social control like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, it's...
That's not an American idea, yeah.
Right, exactly.
All right, listen, thanks. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Deer Park.
All right, Deer Park. Thank you so much for your call.
Okay.
Have a good night. Well, it's good to hear from our listeners. We still have some time for more phone calls if people want to call us. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Do you hear about this... this is disgusting. I could go through so many stories, but there's only an hour. This story, though, really got to me. This guy was killed by cops, all right? And this is why people kneel for the national anthem. This is why people raise their fists. This is why people protest. But basically, this guy was killed by cops a few years ago, and his family sued. His family sued the police. I believe this was in Florida, and the family was awarded by the jury $4. Yeah, $4. And after costs and percentages, that came down to 4 cents. And apparently, the jury was angry that the family wasted their time with this case by trying to get justice for the guy who was killed. It was a federal case. They deliberated for about 10 hours over 2 days last week before deciding that Gregory Hill, who was intoxicated when police shot him, was 99% responsible for his own death. And in Florida, if someone is intoxicated and determined to be more than 50% at fault, their damages are reduced to zero. So no matter what number the jury returned with, the family would not have been awarded any financial compensation. Still, they awarded Hill's mother $1 for funeral expenses, and each of Hill's children $1 for the loss of their father and their future pain and suffering. It's just, to me, that kind of a statement is just so incredibly insulting and insensitive, no matter what, you know? And just to say, this is all you're worth. This is all you're going to get. Your pain means nothing to us. I don't care what the guy did. That is something that just fills me with just horror, just absolute horror. So the jury came back into the courtroom and said they couldn't reach a verdict after 6 hours. The judge sent them back. After about 2 hours, they came back with the verdict. They looked angry, like they wanted a way out. The jury said they couldn't reach a verdict after 8 hours and then reached one which valued a child's pain and suffering at $1. Either that is punitive or this family's lives were virtually worthless. $0 would have been better, that's according to their lawyer. The family had been asking for anywhere from $500,000 to $10 million, including just over $11,000 for funeral expenses. And understandably, they are heartbroken. Now, here's what happened. According to CBS affiliate WPEC, police came to Hill's home on the afternoon of January 14, 2014, after receiving a complaint that he was playing loud music. Black man playing loud music. You know what that means. Now, WPAC reports that Deputy Sheriff Christopher Newman and Deputy Edward Lopez pounded on Hill's front door at 3 p.m., according to court documents. After repeated banging, Hill manually pushed up the garage door where he was listening to music, then immediately put it back down. Now, whether Hill was holding a gun at this point is in dispute. The deputies say that he was. Other witnesses, including his 9-year-old daughter, who was sitting on a bench across the street, said he was not. Regardless, open up the garage door, close the garage door. As the garage door closed, Newman fired 4 shots, hitting Hill 3 times, including a shot to the head that killed him instantly. Investigators reportedly found an unloaded gun in Hill's back pocket. That is what happened. Now, think about that for a second. What I just said. He opened up the garage door, closed the garage door, was shot through the garage door by cops, and then they found an unloaded gun in his back pocket. Now, at what point did he put the gun in his back pocket? Okay, if he's holding a gun, right, and he's shot, what do you, you put the gun in your back pocket? That makes no sense. And what kind of mentality shoots somebody through a door? And what kind of mentality shoots somebody who is not directly threatening you? You're pounding on the guy's door. You don't know who's at the door. Florida, stand your ground, unless you're black, of course. And this is considered correct. This is considered normal. This jury seemed to buy it. How insane is that? And this story is getting virtually no coverage, maybe for the 4-cent thing, maybe for the 4-cent damages that they awarded for this guy's murder. Now, the sheriff's office released a statement saying, "We are pleased to see this difficult and tragic incident come to a conclusion. Deputy Newman was placed in a very difficult situation. And like so many fellow law enforcement officers must do every day, he made the best decision he could for the safety of his partner, himself, and the public, given the circumstances he faced. We appreciate the jury's time and understanding and wish everyone involved in this case the best as they move forward." That is how you deal with the murder of an innocent civilian. Yeah, okay, drunk in your own garage, holding a gun in a state where it's encouraged, shot through the door, and an unloaded gun in your back pocket. There are so many things that are wrong about this case. The 4-cent thing is the least of it, actually. And this is the kind of thing that people get away with every single day. This is what cops get away with every single day. And this is why people sit or kneel or raise their damn fist for the national anthem. Because this is not right.
Or call them pigs.
No one's even doing that, you know?
They are. They're pigs.
Okay, you're doing that, but you see, that just makes it too easy for their proponents because you're being disrespectful and childish, all right? These people are being mature about, you know, kneeling in silence for injustice, raising your fist, protesting whatever way you can. That is noble. That is something that I think everybody can stand behind. And, yeah, if it doesn't work out, call them pigs. But the point is, it's wrong, and we need to challenge that. We absolutely need to challenge that. You know, there's another case very similar to what's going on in Israel where this medic, did you hear about this? This 21-year-old medic was helping someone who had been shot in Gaza. She approached the fence on Friday in her medic's vest, both of her arms raised to show the Israeli soldiers that were 100 yards away. She posed no threat. Shot in her chest by an Israeli sniper. And this is somehow okay. This is somehow normal. And, you know, nobody in our government is saying this is wrong. Nobody in the Israeli government is saying that's wrong. This is something that is just supposedly the right thing to do.
This is business as usual.
It's business as usual. And the thing is, though, you know, you get into arguments with people about this, saying, well, you know, it's because of Hamas and because they fire rockets. She wasn't firing rockets. She wasn't part of Hamas. She was a medic trying to tend to somebody who was wounded. And if you're sitting there and you're arguing that it's okay for an Israeli sniper to shoot an unarmed woman in the head, think about it. Go to the mirror and say that out loud. Look at yourself and tell me you can't do better than that. It's just, I feel like I'm living in bizarro land. I really do. The things that we are expected to accept, you know, it doesn't matter who is doing what. Right and wrong is not that hard to differentiate. And I think we need to take a good look at the positions we're supporting and ask ourselves, is that really the right position? Is that how I want to be remembered?
Yeah, are we really as civilized as we think we are?
Yeah, well, I think we'll find out pretty soon. Hey, we're out of time, though. Boy, the time goes by. OTW at 2600 is our email address. I do ask that when we play the national anthem, as we do at the end of our show, that people do stand and show some respect for at least the lyrics, you know, because I think the lyrics are the most important part of the entire thing. And if you can't show respect for that, you know, what's the point, right?
Yeah. Don't be an evil pig from Planet Porkchop.
Exactly. Good night.
Oh, I wish I were an Oscar Mayer Wiener. That is what I truly like to be. 'Cause if I were an Oscar Mayer Wiener, everyone would be in love with me. My baloney has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. My baloney has a second name. It's M-A-Y-E-R. Oh, I love to eat it every day. And if you ask me why, I'll say, 'cause Oscar
There was a cottage where lived a young boy. One day his parents went for a walk.
Boy?
They said, for they never got round to naming him.
Please look after the cottage.
I will.
The boy promised. But as soon as they walked down the hill, the boy yelled,
Hog!
His parents ran back to the cottage.
Where?
They asked, but the boy only laughed. Furious, they left again.
Hog!
The boy yelled again.
Where?
Asked his parents, but the boy only laughed. Again they left, angrier than before. Suddenly, an energy hog appeared.
Hello.
Now, an energy hog is what you have when humans waste energy.
Why am I hungry?
Said the hog. Terrified, the boy cried out,
Hog!
But his parents, suspecting another trick, ignored him. So the boy logged on to energyhog.org, played cool games, learned how to rid the cottage of the energy hog, and became a hero to his family. And the moral is, to use energy wisely, log on to energyhog.org. Or, if you cry hog, it better be a hog calling contest.
This public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.